Hey everyone, welcome back into the Level Up Experience. This is episode number 36. My guest today is Ned Lerner, the CEO at Hero Live. Ned is an innovator in new media platforms. He wrote EA's first hit 3D game, founded Multitude, the startup behind Fireteam, which was the first MOBA, and FireTalk, which is the Skype precursor. He worked on John Madden Football and The Sims as the CTO. At Sony, he was director of engineering on the PS4, working on projects including the LLVM, Playgo, Scream, BRB, ATF, and DTE. We're going to discuss his career in the gaming industry, why Hero.live will change the way viewers experience media, and we answer live questions. This was a previously recorded LinkedIn and YouTube live stream. You can connect with me on LinkedIn at Chris Reed, C-R-I-S-R-E-E-D, and make sure to subscribe to Level Up Experience on YouTube. Links will be in the description. Thank you to everyone who's left a 5-star rating and review. Really does mean a lot. Hope you enjoy the podcast. I am going to give Ned a couple minutes to introduce himself, and then we're going to dive right into it.
Hey, great. Not quite sure where to start. I've been doing this since college, making games. I joined up with EA when there were about 70 people a couple of years before the IPO, and had the good fortune of working with some terrific people and making of this game called Chuck Yeager's Advanced Flight Trainer, which was their number one hit of the year, their IPO. So take a little bit of credit for that and had a good time. And then I met up with my college roommate, Paul, and we created a company called Looking Glass Technologies, which started doing texture mapping games before anybody else. Chris mentioned System Shock and Ultima Underworld and Flight Unlimited. They're all really cool games, and the alumni of Looking Glass have spread out through the world, Valve and Naughty Dog and Microsoft, everywhere, me at Sony. So that was awesome. And then I came back to California in 96 to do what is, I think, called internet gaming, which was kind of hadn't much been done before. And we did a game called Fire Team, which was in some ways the first MOBA, teams of four competing to capture each other's base, all real time. And again, this is now 1997. So most of our users were still on modems, if people know what that word even is. So a little bit too far ahead of our time. League of Legends came out 10 years after that.
Wow.
And then that actually changed from, so Fire Team came with a voice headset in the box. And so we could do team coordination. And we actually we pivoted from Fire Team to Fire Talk, which was, as Chris said, it was a Skype-alike 3-4 years before Skype. So instead of shooting your friends, you could just talk to your friends. And that became a kind of internet.1 sensation. Raised $50 million and spent it. Thank you. My very expensive MBA. And then I joined Electronic Arts as a CTO of Maxis, worked on The Sims, which was my first corporate job. And going from startups to The Sims was quite a experience, learning experience. Thank you. That leveling up experience even. And then last 13 years at Sony PlayStation, last five working on the PlayStation, PlayStation 4, which was, again, just a complete blast and amazing. So, and here I am doing another one called Hero.live. So that's 40 years in 1 minute, 2 minutes.
Good timing. You know, I appreciate that. I want to start here, actually, because you mentioned kind of the startup life versus the corporate life. And I'd like to kind of get kind of your just overall meta on that. You know, what the difference is, because there's a lot of startups, a lot of startup founders that watch this. And people on the corporate side too. So I think some of us have been on both sides, some just on one, but you've done both. So
yeah, they're really different. I started off as a kid doing my own games, and that seemed very easy to me. And then when I jumped into the corporate life, that seemed super hard. And then after a few years, I realized, you know, it's a pretty good life. You get a paycheck, and you don't have to worry about going broke, and you get benefits, and they tell you what to do, so you don't have to think that much. Sorry. And you get to work with
structure,
and actually they teach you a lot of stuff because there's all these systems and smart people and experts. So it's like, oh, I don't have to figure it out myself. I go to the director of PR who's been doing it for 10 years, and here's a finance guy who's been doing it for 10 years, and here's how to do all the analysis and all the planning. And so I think you're really blessed if you can see both sides. They're For the entrepreneur, you can learn a lot from the structure and expertise of a big company. And then from the point of view of a big company, just having to do everything yourself is just an eye-opening experience. So they're, I think they help, but yeah, they're. I don't know how many people want to try both things, but they're very different, and I think in some ways very complementary. So
now you were with PlayStation. You were with Sony. I'm sorry, with Sony for about 14 years, like 03 to 2017, roughly. Yeah. Overall experience there.
Great people. When I started, it was run by a guy called Jack Trenton, who was just a nice family-friendly guy. Company had been making good money. It was just a really kind and family-oriented place doing. And it was one of the few places I've worked that everyone liked PlayStation. Everyone believed in PlayStation, which is, I think, a real blessing. Not a lot of corporate jobs have that sort of happy spirit. And then I started kind of at the first peak of PlayStation, like PlayStation 2 era. And then PlayStation 3 was kind of a disaster. Production problems, cost problems, really, really difficult technology problems. And so basically the next 7-8 years were digging out of the hole.
Time reference for PS3, what was the time reference for the audience? May not know.
Oh my gosh. I would guess roughly 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. This now famous Mark Cerny kind of was the Steve Jobs of Sony, going in and saying, I'm going to kick butt and take names and we're going to fix everything. And he brought his team along. He brought me along, and a whole bunch of people kind of basically changed Sony. So, including moving the headquarters of PlayStation from Tokyo to San Mateo, California, which is really strange for a big Japanese company to have headquarters in San Mateo. So, changed everything.
Just real quick, I had another question on it, like the structural changes. So what happened between PS3 and PS4, and then how did those changes lead to that success?
Ken Kutaragi had been leading PlayStation from day one. He was a bold, brash Japanese entrepreneur. PlayStation 1 was a giant hit. PlayStation 2 was a giant hit. And PlayStation 3, he got a little too excited, shall we say? Who wants an $800 game machine? That's really hard to program. So not only did it annoy consumers, but drove game developers crazy. And to Sony's credit, they stuck in and lost $3-4 billion the first 2 or 3 years, and then they made it up the next 4 or 5 years. So a lot of companies wouldn't have that dedication. But after that disaster, a lot of the senior people in PlayStation got jobs changed. It's a Japanese company, so people don't generally get fired. They just get sort of reorganized. And then a whole new team of people came in. Again, Mark Cerny was like technical lead, but there was new marketing folks, new sales folks. And basically, the short version is PlayStation 3 was a very Japanese custom machine. Mm-hmm. And the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox and all future consoles are now basically white box PCs with really, really nice graphics cards, really nice hard disks, standard operating system. So it was a complete change of design from custom game machine to it's basically a super laptop with a super graphics card. And so that was it was fun as a technology person just to help that complete flip over happen. So
yeah, and that change and that dynamic, because you talked about that change from transitioning from the PS3 to PS4 and just over a complete overhaul. We've talked about that off air too. It's really interesting.
Just for example, inside the PS4 is FreeBSD, which for a Japanese company is crazy talk. Open source operating system. What? But FreeBSD is fantastic. I mean, it's 20 years of testing, incredibly secure. So that was one of the projects my group worked on. So I'm particularly proud of it.
Very cool. Thanks for sharing that, because I think it's really good to know people's background, where they're coming from. Mm-hmm. And then how that kind of shapes what they're doing now. So fast forwarding to the end of right around 2017, made a transition. So what made you want to come back to the startup life? Like, what is Hero Live? What's this concept?
I'm laughing because the real answer is I asked my wife permission to do another startup.
Because that's always first. Yeah.
Before that, she said, I'll divorce you if you do another startup. But thankfully, my 14 years at Sony were financially rewarding, and she gave me permission to try again. So that's the real reason. I'm always looking for the next thing. The PlayStation 4 was an awesome project. And then when it shipped, it got kind of quiet. I was like, hey, this works. Can you do the same thing again and again and again? And after about 3 years of that, I was like, got to do something new. So I think I made, so we looked, you know, it's like, okay, mobile's hot. Snapchat back then was hot. It's like, let's do something kind of inspired by Snapchat, but cool, but cooler. And it took, so I quit my job, took a while to actually figure out what the hell I was doing. But at one point we realized that, hey, there's 4 billion phones. They're awesome at talking and they're awesome at playing videos. Why can't we do them both at the same time? It's like, And then I think the genius idea struck, which is instead of sticking everybody into one room like everybody else, why don't we give each group of friends their own private box, like at a stadium? And then you can talk to your friends and watch. And if we're clever, if there's 1,000 groups of friends, that's like having like 1,000 sections at a stadium. So then you can hear the cheers too. And I was like, that sounds really good. Let's build that. And that's been the last 3 years, basically.
Okay. And then, so talk about, again, for those that may not know, but most know about the experience with, you know, if you're watching an event right now, whether it's esports, traditional sports, or another media source, you know, what is the concept between, you know, watching together? What, and then how is that different from like the traditional way of consuming media right now?
Let's see. In some ways, it's the usual analogy we have is watching on a couch. So when you invite your friends over to watch basketball or baseball or whatever, you're looking at the screen and you're talking to each other, and occasionally you might be yelling at the TV. And we wanted to duplicate that experience. So when you're watching a game, you're not staring into your friend's, you know, nose. You're staring at the TV set, and but you can hear your friends. And so it's a very It's not that different from going to a dark theater. It's like your attention and eyes are all on the stage, but you can whisper to the people to the left and right. So that's the hero design. It's again like a private box at a theater or a private box at a stadium. You've got nice broadcast quality video, full screen, no kind of noise or clutter between you and what you're watching, but you can still talk all you want to your buddies. You can invite your buddies to your box, and then you can hear the outside crowd too by playing with the crowd volume. If you want to hear the crowd, great. If you want to turn off the crowd, that's fine too. So in my mind, that dark theater experience is usually people's favorite way to watch, and you can now do that from your phone instead of having to drive to the now closed movie theater.
The other interesting concept too is, so you talked about kind of live media, so live sports, traditional sports, esports, or other media, but also there's the VOD component. So this is the recorded component as well. So like, for example, the first time I was a part of Jumping on Hero Live, I got my brother. So I opened up my own box, opened up my app, and I sent him the link to jump into my group. And we watched old VODs, Mango, if you guys watch, you know, any smashers out there. We watched the old VOD with Mango, and this was like a midnight, and we sat there and talked, and you know, we hung out together.
Yeah.
And we watched the VOD, and it after an hour, like, we've been here for an hour. Like,
yeah, it's kind of uncanny. It really feels like you're watching on a couch and in a dark room.
That's where I was. I was on a couch in a dark room.
But it's good. It's good. And I don't know, like, if people have used Zoom, after about 20 minutes, Zoom starts to drive me crazy because of all these like windows and glitches, and some people are on the screen. I don't know. It's just hard. All the distractions. So the dark room, it works great to actually, it's kind of a cute, a marvel, a technical marvel. Thank you myself.
the other frame around this is like, it feels like you're having to pull from different sources to have that kind of feel. So like, take Hero Live out of it. If you're wanting to be on a Discord watch party, to have the audio component on top of a Twitch live stream, it's like piecemealing multiple platforms together to create that experience. Like in the past, it's what you could do. So you could be on the Discord audio, and then there's your audio component, but then you got to have a Twitch stream up or a YouTube stream up to have the visual side. So is that kind of putting all those together?
Yeah, putting it all together just kind of makes it not only simpler, but it actually, in terms of the tech, it makes things work better. Mm-hmm. So by putting them all together, you can do like really good echo cancellation, which otherwise is a real problem if you've ever tried to use one program to talk and another program to watch, that the microphone can get confused. It also makes it pretty easy to synchronize. And then maybe from the point of view of the entrepreneurial side, the people who own the media really want to own the audience too. And so by putting everybody into their room and their theater and their stadium, then they have this direct connection with the audience. Where right now, your audience might be on the other side of the TV set and you don't know who's watching, where they're watching. You have no way of doing anything with them. Whereas they're all in your virtual venue. Mm-hmm. And you have control over that experience, and you literally own your customers, which is certainly a win. And that's one of the, if you look at sports, you see a good chunk of their revenue, even something like 50%, is from that in-venue audience. Even though it may only represent 1% of the total audience, it's just so much more powerful and monetizable. And so the virtual venue is, a much better business for the media and rights holders than a simple, passive audience. So that's kind of where it all starts to fit together.
Okay. So you mentioned business model. I think it's a good pivot. So is it B2B, B2C, B2B2C?
We say B2B2C. The analogy is we make theaters, we make stadiums. And for normal people, we make living rooms. Living rooms are free, but everything else costs money. And and who needs a theater or stadium? Well, sports teams need stadiums. Theaters, movie people need theaters. Virtual classrooms actually, I think, might be our biggest business eventually, just because.
I was going to ask you about EdTech. Yeah. Is that part of the roadmap potentially?
Yeah. Okay. So if you look at the numbers, business events are about a trillion dollar a year business, a lot of business events. Mm-hmm. Media and entertainment is $2 trillion. But education is $6 trillion, which just reflects the fact that most people are in a classroom between the age of like 6 and 21. So it's like, it's a really, really big business. And our technology is the first that lets the entire class participate and talk as if they're in the room. All the other technologies mute the students, which creates a very unnatural interaction between the students and the teachers. But even worse, my experience learning is I learned a lot from my fellow students in study groups or not necessarily in the classroom, but sometimes in labs and in tables. And so we're the only system that'll let the students hang out and talk in class or in study groups, as part of the educational process. So we're really excited about that market. And we've been spending the last 3 years putting the pieces together. So it's getting really close now.
Gotcha. So obviously that's a work in progress with that, but that's an interesting layer to the ed tech side. So I guess the progression, we talked off air about this as well, but so initially it seemed like to me it started kind of in the YouTube world, the Twitch world, the streaming world, like maybe the esports side, and then the progression to traditional media, so sports, and then sounds like to ed tech. So combining all those together?
It's, I hope we're not in over our heads, but exactly your progression. It's like the team is very game oriented. And so we said, hey, esports needs a live audience, period. Let's build it. And then at some point we ran into some other smart person who showed us how to hook up to ESPN and Turner and Fox Sports. Mm-hmm. And that should be coming out next month. And that's pretty awesome to be able to watch your favorite TV shows with your friends. And now we're going out and meeting people and talking to people, the educators are saying, this is so much better than Zoom. Can you do something for me? And it's like, after Series A, we promise. We'll get there.
Progression. Yeah. So what's the difference between this and like a Netflix party?
So Netflix Party does one thing well, which is it synchronizes Netflixes. So it makes it, I don't know if people, before that people used to like say, one, two, three, go. And then they would watch together. And you tend to sort of drift apart over time or because somebody paused or whatever. Mm-hmm. So the way people used to do it is they used to manually synchronize plus use, you know, Skype or FaceTime or Discord to talk.
Right, the layering we talked about earlier.
Right, now again, and then you're going to get synchronization problems and echo cancellation problems. So at least Netflix Party solves the synchronization problems, but it only works on desktop Chrome as a Chrome extension. So everybody in the party has to want to watch Netflix on their laptop in Chrome with a Chrome extension, which is like, you know, I'm glad that millions of people are doing it, but that's clearly not the whole world. Whereas Hero is our Netflix version, we're hoping starts showing up in a week or two on Android. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the summer, you'll be able to watch Netflix with your friends on any phone or any desktop in a mixed group with voice, with echo cancellation and all that. So we think Netflix Party is half a step and we're the full step. So that's going to be a huge deal for our company.
And it comes down to the word access.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Working with, you know, a number of tech startups, it comes who can access your tech in right. the end, right? So I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah, and with parties and friends groups, it's really annoying if two of your friends can get it and one of your friends can't. It's like, that just doesn't work. So when you're talking about groups of friends, you gotta cover the bases. You gotta have, if I want to watch it on PC, I gotta be able to watch it on PC. And if I want to watch it on Android, I gotta be able to watch it on Android. So we'll be the only game in town that'll let you watch on mobile or PC. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Very interesting. I've got a number of other questions, but if you have a question on LinkedIn, if you're on YouTube, go ahead and type in your question at any time, and we'll be happy to get to those as we go through the interview. And now, again, we have Ned Lerner, CEO at Hero Live. I had a real quick question. This is kind of a hard shift a little bit, but advice for tech startup founders that maybe have their first startup. I know that, you know, there's a lot of potentially people in the esports space. I've talked to a lot of people, just a lot of ideas, a lot of concepts out there, but how do you get traction? Like, what are some things? And that's a loaded question, but
easy, no problem. Just you follow my magic rules and you too will have a million users. I got to write, when I figure it out, I promise I'll write it up for everybody. Startups are really hard. And so if you're doing a startup, be prepared for the battle of your life. I think it's very likely you'll learn more in your first year of a startup than your last 5 years of your job, but it doesn't guarantee you'll make any money. So if with a little bit of luck, you'll hit on something that makes money early and not later. And the longer it is between starting and making money, hopefully you have some rich friends to help you out. If not, you may not make it to that second point. The quicker you can get to traction, ideally money, but possibly just like big numbers, the better. And I don't think there's any easy path. The problem, I've been doing this for a long time. Mm-hmm. In my mind, it's actually harder. It's easier to start a startup now than ever before, because you can like rent stuff from Amazon and you can hire people across the world with these contracting services. And there's these amazing platforms which you can distribute to the world in, you know, a day. That's all makes it easy. And
and Cardo for your cap tables and all those.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But because of that, it's actually harder to succeed, because I haven't seen a number, but it feels to me like I'm competing against, if not 10 times more startups, mm-hmm. but maybe 100 times more startups. So, and I run into people with very nice ideas and I say, how much homework have you done? Is there anything else like this? And they're like, no, there isn't. And if it's in my space, it's like, well, actually, I've been doing my homework for 3 years and there's four things exactly like you. So go do some more homework.
I'm glad you said that, because that is one of the things I hear a lot of the conversations from founders is that no one competes with us. And in the back of my, it's the same thing. I said, yes, they do. That's one of the more universal things you get. It's like, oh, we're the only one that does this. We're unique. No, you're not. And not to be condescending, I'm not trying to be, but it's just, right. it is what it is, right?
Well, You know. Well, for, like I said, I spent the first 2 years of my startup when I was still at Sony, essentially doing research and homework and experiments and trying things out. And I thought it would take me 6 months to figure out something outside of doing PlayStation for 13 years. And the reality is it took me 2 years to sort of really get a handle on the market. And it's not even just a local market, it's a global market. So if you're not paying attention, if you're in the mobile space and you're not paying attention to Asia, you are missing most of it, not some of it. So so that's one possible trick, which is do your homework while somebody else is paying you, like I did. And then when the pieces have all settled down and you found your team and you've got some investors ready to go, then you can jump in. Otherwise it just makes it harder.
So speaking of investors and going back to Hero for a second. So there was a funding round back in March as well. So obviously congratulations to the team on that. Talk about that experience of, you know, raising funds and kind of that experience, and obviously not just with Hero, but in the past as well.
Raising money, the bane of the So one thing to realize, if there's one main job as CEO, it's you are the money raiser. Nobody else can do it for you. And you may run into people who say, hey, I can help you raise money. Well, maybe they can a little bit. If you can't raise the money, you're in trouble. So which means either do something that's small enough that you can do it without a lot of money, or if you want to be more ambitious, you know, make sure that you can raise the money. For me, I think I've made the same, I don't know if it's a mistake, but the same behavior as all other entrepreneurs, which is I can do this in 6 months for $500,000. 3 years later and $2 million later, it's like, oh, did I say $500,000? I meant $5 million. So
accelerate, building up the team, things like that.
And to be a little bit more self-congratulatory, actually, when we started, I said, you know, I think this is gonna be a $5 million project. And then everyone I talked to said, like, oh, that's too much, you can't do that. It's like, okay, well, I'm foolish, sure, let's do it for a tenth the price. Yeah, so for me, I'm not in the, you know, I've been living in Silicon Valley for 30 years, and Silicon Valley's got a lot of wealthy people, but more relevant to my life, I would say, you know, I got a lot of smart friends, and like one out of 20 of them made a good pot of dough. So, and one out of five of those, one out of 20 are willing to let me play with some of it. So that was my shortcut. The one thing I will recommend is a program like 500 Startups, which we went into. It was highly recommended to us. It was a really good program. It's almost expected that you will be part of an accelerator at this point. If you're not, you're gonna, well, again, it depends on who you are and your experience, but if you have not done a tech startup or a venture funded tech startup, I would definitely recommend the accelerator route. They know their stuff.
Yeah, the imagery, I guess, maybe is train tracks. It kind of gives you the train track, and you're the train, right?
Yeah.
I mean, kind of the way, you know, the imagery I kind of tell people on accelerators. So, and it's really also interesting that over the years, how many accelerators there are now.
Yeah. There's tons.
Yeah, compared to 2014. So there's a lot of opportunity there to kind of get your air quote, you know, your own train tracks to kind of guide you.
And for me, I did it the old fashioned way, which means I spent like 10 years figuring it out. Accelerator does a pretty good job of speeding up that process. So, it's pretty hard to get into a good accelerator. So that's, if you get in, great. If not, like I said, if you're really an entrepreneur, you'll figure it out. I don't want to be too positive or negative. I mean, my general recommendation is if you think your life will be miserable for the next 10 years, if you don't do it, then go do it. And your life won't be miserable for more than 2 or 3 years. Sorry for the bad joke.
But the regret. No, it's like it's a pain of regret. Yeah.
Exactly. You have to really, really want it. It's a long and difficult road.
So what's next for Hero? What's next for Hero Live over the next couple of months? Just give a little.
Right. So I think like there's always three pillars. There's the investors, the business partners, and the consumers. Mm-hmm. In terms of investment, we are in the midst of a Republic crowdfunding campaign, which is going pretty well. We've raised $500,000. Republic folks have been great to work with. They're difficult to get into, like these accelerators, but if you can get in, it's a win. I have no regrets. Maybe a little bit more interesting, when I've talked to venture capitalists, they're pretty down on equity crowdfunding.
Sure.
But, I think they think the cool people go to VCs, and I think they're right. Mm-hmm. But not everybody has a VC buddy who can write them a check for $5 million. And then at some level, the equity crowdfunding people compete against the VCs. They're both in the same business. And so I think there's a little bit of rivalry, I'll call it there.
Sure. Yeah. And that, I think it was 2016 for Regulation CF. Is when those platforms started really popping up. And Republic is probably one of the best platforms out there.
Yeah, I think they're good. Chuck Petit, who runs it, is very smart. They bought Fig, which is a great game crowdfunding thing. And we've been blessed by being we're the only co-listed company because we're of our kind of start and dedication to esports. Good stuff. In terms of the features and consumer side, we're eager for sports to begin. We were going to go out with March Madness with our TV integration, and didn't happen. But basketball is supposedly showing up July 30th, and baseball is showing up July 24th. And we are working hard to be ready on day one for both of those. So you'll be able to go to Hero and watch the nationally televised baseball games with your friends on Hero. You'll need a cable TV account, like a Comcast or AT&T, to do that. But sports aren't free, so sorry. we can only let you watch with your friends. We're not going to give you free sports. That's called piracy. And then Netflix supports, we're hoping, is ready for testing next week on Android. So it's going to be a big summer. And then I don't know. to talk a little bit too much. We've also the giant crowd effect, the crowd noise thing, is going to come alongside, hopefully, in time for opening day. But if not, by August, you'll be able to cheer with 500, 1,000, a couple thousand other people, which even I think it sounds cool. It works in real life. I really think it'll work virtually, but we'll find out. So wish me luck.
Since you're so entrenched in all of this, obviously day to day, how are consumer viewership, how's that going to change? Like the behavior around viewership, how's that going to change? I mean, because obviously this is what the team does day in and day out through the pandemic and things like that. So even we're not post pandemic yet, I guess. I don't even know. It's post, during, whatever you want to call it. It's
pandemic fatigue is where we are right now.
How does that change the behavior?
In terms of sports, people are really sad, maybe a simple word, that they can't, there's no sports, and even if they're in the sports that exist, they can't attend. And that sadness, I think, will be in some ways emphasized when they see basketball and baseball without a crowd. I've seen that Electronic Arts is cutting some deals with the sports leagues to use this audio simulation from their sports games to sort of replace the crowd. We'll be able to give people a live crowd. I'm pretty hopeful that'll be cool. Electronic Arts will be able to give them a fake crowd. I don't know. Maybe that'll be cool too. We'll find out.
Is it to elicit emotion with the crowd?
Yeah. The analogy I've been giving, it's like going to a practice game. Or even simpler, if you ever watch sports with the TV turned off, it's just part of our, I think, deep in our human nature is a need to gather with our fellow man and women and and participate in something with passion and intensity. It's just we're like a group animal, and we need these group events. We need our churches, we need our sports, we need our clubs, even our bars and our restaurants. And so with all this disappearing, people, I know people are hungry for that human connection. And so it's been terrible for the world. Somewhat by luck, you know, we had set out to be a cure for the social isolation caused by people doing this with their phone by themselves for 2 hours a day. And so this COVID and the enforced social isolation is definitely driving consumers and businesses to look for solutions. And we're in some ways the most prepared for this particular eventuality of like, how do we gather in groups within 6 feet of each other? So, yeah.
And it's also a learning curve. It's a feel. You have to try things more than once before you're comfortable with it. Obviously, right. That's with just adoption, tech adoption in general for any kind of platform. Right. But it's been a really hard, and it's not, and it wasn't something that, you know, this isn't something that, anyone asked for. I mean, this was put on us. So then now, we're gonna have to find and get creative in ways to create with one another, impact each other. So it is really interesting. And you're seeing also just different types of virtual event platforms and how those look, and there's different ways to communicate with each other. Even virtual. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't love the word desperate, but people are really looking hard for solutions and trying everything out. And some of them, there's nothing that people love. As popular as Zoom is, I hear so many people going like, oh, it drives me bonkers.
Why have you heard?
I'm by training a physics engineer, and which it's kind of a weird way of looking at the world. So I keep, quickly go to like how people's brains work. And so your brains are programmed to detect visual anomalies to keep you alive. And so anything that isn't quite right, you get hypersensitive to. So if you're talking to somebody and they're not looking at you, you get kind of freaked out, which happens like always on Zoom because people don't stare into their cameras. If you're talking to somebody who's got this weird lighting, they're shadowed wrong. If there's glitches in the video, if there's glitches in the background, the frame rate is off. So it's like Zoom is like a continuous slight visual visual anomaly. And then if our brains aren't used to looking at four scenes or eight scenes or 25 scenes at once. And so if you're presented with these panels, it's like you're searching. It's like you're out in this like scary place and you're trying to figure out what to look at, and you can never figure it out. So it's just so much cognitive load to turn a Zoom into something normal. Mm-hmm. And so I think the way that works is the way you do it on your show, Chris, and other streamers. It's like there's it's a really good quality stream. It's got good lighting, good cameras. In the case of game streaming, the game looks perfect. The streamer is sort of tucked in the corner, so he's not kind of driving you crazy. And that sort of game streaming experience, I think, is about as good as it can possibly be for virtual. And the Zoom thing is nothing like it. For Hero, we're closer to the game streaming experience, or more specifically, we're closer to the dark theater experience, which is 100% attention on the screen, no glitches, no anomalies, no worrying about the camera, no worrying about, no needing to hold the device in a certain place for 10 minutes or 40 minutes, no need to only work on the laptop. And so it's just a very comfortable, pleasant, fun thing, as opposed to like the chore of Zoom.
Mm-hmm. I had a last question on this, on scalability, mm-hmm. on the VIP rooms, as you call them, in Hero, on Hero Live. So what does that scalability look like? How many can be in a room? How many this particular event can you section off and things like that?
Right. So our model is either a theater box or a stadium box. Theater box will hold about eight. A stadium box will probably hold like 30, 40. Mm-hmm. But if you go to a stadium box, you'll see that it actually isn't one conversation. It's like, it's actually usually like four rows of seats. So you get, you know, four or five conversations. Our boxes are maxed out at 25, which we think is plenty. But it's nice. Everybody can have their own box. You can invite your friends to it. If it gets too big, your friends can split off and have their own box. You can recombine, whatever. And
so then, infinitely scalable.
Well, an engineer would never use that word, but we think we can handle 1,000 boxes, and with a little bit of time and money, we want to be able to go to, you know, 10 times that and then 10 times that. There are, you know, my local team, the Warriors, would get when they were good, we'd get like 2 million people.
It's a window. Y'all been spoiled.
They were good. They would get 2 million people watching them, and we would like to be able to. Our theory is in 5 or 10 years, half the people will watch socially instead of solitaire. And so we would like to be able to support, you know, 500,000, 1 million people watching. And of course, there's even bigger events like, you know, the finals or mm-hmm. something that's 10 million people. So we want to be able to go big. And what I'm really saying is the people we want to work with want to be able to go big. And so we want to be able to support them. And therefore, we'll grow as time and money permit.
Yeah, and going back to these leagues, they want to give access to people to watch their product. I mean, right. I know it sounds simple, but I mean, I think that's the way they look at it. I mean, especially when it's on the forefront right now as to how it's being consumed, or, well, not being consumed now, but how it will be consumed, assuming it's going to be coming back here.
So, and there's a bit, there's some magic that happens when you get 1,000 people together. You start, my experience, hopefully kind of funny, is like middle school basketball. And you go to a game with like 10 parents, and it's kind of lame because 10 parents can't do it. But you go to a game with like 200 kids and 100 parents, and it's rocking. I mean, people are screaming and shouting. It's awesome. So mm-hmm. You don't need a million people to create that. It's what in TV is a studio audience. Get a couple hundred people together, make them all live, and suddenly you've got this lovely layer this liveness and excitement that was otherwise missing. So that's sort of the minimum. That's where we're starting from, that sort of minimum 1,000, 2,000 people. And now it's live, and it feels live and it sounds live. And if you're one of those people, for all you can tell, it's live. I mean,
right. And like you said, those are interesting points. Like because I've been to a few Saints games, me and my wife are big Saints fans, and I'm really engaging with, you know, 100+ people. Well, not really. Like you're saying, like the proximity wise, you know, around, you know, high fiving, what, 10, 15, I don't know. Just like what you're trying to recreate. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a big blob of 10,000 people. It's the, mm-hmm. it's a person to your left and right, and maybe the person in front. It's people are people. So you go to dinner with 12 people, it breaks into two conversations. You go to dinner with 4 people, it's one conversation. At eight people, maybe it's one or two. So that's, you know, we can, because we're electronic, we can kind of try all sorts of things out and find what the sort of optimal number is and give you that. I'm pretty sure it's not zero though. that's today. Zero. You want to watch by yourself? You can watch, there's 5,000 channels. You want to watch with somebody else? 0 channels. Seems like something's missing there.
Right. Well, I'm going to take a minute. I just want to say hi to a couple people. Sidwant, what's going on? David, Asaf, these are on LinkedIn. Magnus, thanks for jumping in. Justin, thanks for jumping in earlier. Wynette, for people that want to get connected to you and learn more about Hero Live, how can they do that? What are some platforms to get connected with you on?
So I'm very visible on LinkedIn, and though I would definitely recommend name dropping Chris and the level of experience, because otherwise I might think you're trying to sell me some IT consulting services, which I don't need this year.
That never happens. That never happens. Yeah.
Maybe next year. LinkedIn is great. Just let me know where you're coming from. We're on Republic. Republic is by law a globally open forum. So go there, take a look. If you got questions, post them. I've answered, I think, 300 questions on Republic, or at least it feels like.
Yeah, they have a forum. That's really cool. If you haven't seen, it's republic.co, correct?
Yeah, that's republic.co. And there's tons. There's a scary amount of information about Republic. I know my competitors can all read everything. It's like, well, if I want to raise money and let the SEC approve it, I gotta disclose. So it's kind of like being a mini public company. So that's a really good place to learn all sorts of stuff beyond this lovely conversation today. So.
Yeah. So, and also if you're just interested just in startups in general and learning, it's got some term sheet, it's got terms and everything else with the convertible, if it's a convertible, no, blah, blah, and all that stuff and cap valuation caps, everything else. Yeah. People are just kind of learning that. I think it's interesting.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. It's a, yeah, they do a good job packaging and all that.
Well, I really appreciate your time, Ned. Thanks for sharing your experience in the gaming industry and all the experience you've been through and then kind of what you're doing now with Hero. I wish you guys luck. Really appreciate it.
Luck is the number one requirement for all entrepreneurial activities. So thank you. I will take it all.
Okay. Yeah, really appreciate it. And then this will be a podcast. We'll have a lot of different links on the YouTube replay about just how to get connected with Ned and then get connected to Hero Live as well. So we'll see you around. We'll have you back on. Dwight's been on a few times as well. The Hero team. So we'll have you guys on here shortly.
Thanks so much, Chris. It was a pleasure.
All right, guys. Thank you very much.
Okay.
See you later.